This episode is brought to you by AARP. 16 years from today, Greg Gerstner will finally land the perfect cannonball. Epic splash. Unsuspecting friends. A work of art only possible because Greg is already meeting all these same people at AARP volunteer and community events that keep him active and involved and help make sure his happiness lives as long as he does. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/local.
Fresh Step knows you'd do anything for your cat, from getting them food that's nicer than yours to letting them take a midday nap on your keyboard. So why settle for basic litter? Switch to Fresh Step. Fresh Step cat litter locks in liquid and odor on contact, giving you up to 15 days of odor control. Learn more at freshstep.com. Step it up to Fresh Step with superior odor control. Versus leading value clumping litter, Fresh Step is a registered trademark of the Clorox Pet Products Company. Febreze is used under license from the Procter & Gamble Company or its affiliates.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store, online today. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. Rick, we are in the middle of the summer. It is July, and it is a fun time in baseball. Honestly, I think my favorite month of baseball, with, you know, October and April sort of rivaling it. But I love July because of all of the content we get surrounding the All-Star Game, the Home Run Derby, the Futures Game, and now we have a Futures Game Skill Showcase too. So there's a lot of things to be excited about this month, and that doesn't even count the first-year player draft and the trade deadline. It's just an incredible month. Are you on the same page in terms of loving July as much as I do?
Yeah, that feels right. I mean, if you weren't going to say like the draft and like, I like how that's now a part of this whole month and the whole All-Star weekend, lumping them all together kind of, it feels better. I don't know. I like it a little bit better just content wise. And yeah, going right up until the trade deadline is always a lot to talk about in July. And yeah, we have a lot to talk about here, it looks like.
Yeah, and I'm once again fighting through the heat, and I know it's starting to heat up on the East Coast as well, but I don't even know what a heat-related podcast mess-up would sound like, but if one of those does occur, it's because it's 100 degrees in my house, and I'm sure relatively hot where Rick is. But yeah, like you said, we got a lot of stuff to talk about today, not only in terms of news and notes, but also we're going to be discussing the All-Star Game rosters, specifically the relievers that were named to the All-Star team. We'll talk about some snubs that should have made the All-Star team. And as always, we'll discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's closer ranks. We'll start it off, though, with the news and notes. We've got a lot because we recorded last week on Tuesday. Usually we record on Thursday. So this gives us a couple extra days of news, notes, and injuries that we missed out on. So let's hop right into it, starting with the news. Jordan Romano, the closer, or the former closer for the Blue Jays, underwent arthroscopic surgery on his right elbow and will be shut down from throwing for at least 6 weeks, and a return late this season is still up in the air.
Yeah, especially if we look at the Blue Jays strongly considering selling their rental pieces. I mean, if they just kind of throw the towel in, there's no real reason for him to come back in September unless somehow they make a run, or if they just want to get him some work late in the season, if he's really healthy, then we could see him closing games in September, but it's going to be an interesting, I wonder, August is the thing for me with the Blue Jays. Cause if they move Jimmy Garcia, will they move Chad Green? He is an option. Or does Chad Green stay? And is Chad Green going to be your closer for August as well? So yeah, it really, you know, for anyone who was able to get Chad Green already, it does look pretty good. It looks like Garcia could be back shortly, maybe even next week after the All-Star break. And I'm guessing maybe he gets like one or two save chances and then gets traded, something like that, just to show that he's healthy and make teams you know, interested again. But yeah, I'm still holding on to Garcia. I just don't know what's going to happen. What's going to happen? Because if somehow he does stay in Toronto, he's probably going to be their closer the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that wouldn't really make sense for Garcia to stay, considering he's a free agent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have a 2.5% chance, according to Fangraphs, to make the playoffs. So that doesn't seem like it's realistic at all to push for that. So it seems like Garcia should be out the door. Romano sounds like he's going to be out for the year. And Chad Green has a shot at maintaining the closer role, though if he is also traded at the deadline, looks like Nate Pearson might be the next man up.
Yeah, that would be my dart throw. Who else? Yeah, Trevor Richards is going to be traded. I mean, yeah, it's really Pearson or Genesis someone. Cabrera. No, please no. Pearson would be fun to watch, though. I would like to see how he would react and how he would, you know, fare in that role. That's, you know, the Blue Jays are a little bit delusional thinking that they can just like sell some of these guys and then win next year, because this team's not even close to competing next year. So. Yeah, I wonder. I mean, eventually there's going to be a full teardown here, and I wonder if Pearson ends up being the closer of the future, or the closer for at least 2 years there. And,
you know, yeah, he's not around for that long.
Right, exactly. So, you know, maybe you get too good. You know, if I were them, I would be looking at him as a closer to try to boost his value, you know, with him closing out games for the next year or so.
Totally. Well, that's the Blue Jays closer situation right now. We'll head over to the Pirates, where David Bednar didn't allow a base runner and struck out one in a scoreless inning of work in a rehab appearance Tuesday with AA Altoona. I think he was supposed to go to AAA, but then some weather stuff forced him to Altoona. Mm-hmm. So Bednar is recovering, and it sounds like he should be returning shortly. The thing with relievers and rehab assignments is that they don't need many. Usually, they don't even need any at all, but sometimes it's like, oh, they can just do one rehab appearance, and if everything feels good, they can rejoin the roster. And at most, it's like a couple if they're working through something. So Bednar should be back right as the All-Star break completes, or, you know, maybe he's back this weekend right before it starts. But Bednar is returning shortly.
Yeah, I mean, for him, he hasn't been out that long, so yeah, it shouldn't. I'm guessing one or probably two innings or two, maybe three outings. And yeah, maybe he's back this weekend.
Yep.
More likely it's next week, but yeah, it's good to see him back. And I know Chapman got a save today, but it's still a little dicey watching that. I was watching that game on game day at work and seeing Holderman coming in the eighth inning and load the bases after Paul Skeens was absolutely just, dominant for seven innings. That Pirates team is going to need their bullpen to be lights out for them to make a run here.
Yeah, I mean, are they even close?
I mean, they're still not fully committed to selling. 48. Yeah, they're like 2.5 games out of the wild card.
10.3% chance to make the playoffs. It feels slim. So you're saying there's a chance.
There's a chance. I mean, that whole NL is just, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because there's so many teams that are kind of in it, but like the Nationals have already kind of said that they're going to sell off pieces. The Cubs have said that they're willing to, but then now it's like they're interested in some, you know, rentals as well. So it will be interesting to see what happens there with the NL.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then Bednar's return means the end of Aroldis Chapman's fantasy relevance in standard leagues, and he's likely to be traded as well, which is something to keep in mind in save plus holds leagues or holds leagues, just considering Chapman's new role wherever he ends up. Our next and last significant bit of news is Devin Williams. He will begin a rehab assignment with High A Wisconsin on Saturday. Williams is returning from a pretty lengthy absence. So after I just made the point of all these relievers returning really quickly from rehab assignments, I would expect Williams to need at least a couple weeks because he hasn't pitched in so long. But before the end of July, it sounds like Devin Williams is going to be in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe next weekend, or probably more likely the week after. Depends on how his rehab goes and how he feels, how he looks. But yeah, it's going to be good to see him on the mound again, see what his velo looks like, see what the stuff looks like. So, unfortunately, it's, you know, I have Trevor Megill pretty much everywhere. So
yeah,
it's an end of an era there, but excited to see Devin Williams again.
Totally. And then the last bit of news, Ian Hamilton of the Yankees resumed a throwing program this week, and he should return sometime at the end of this month, maybe early August, but it's definitely a needed reinforcement for a beleaguered Yankees bullpen. Now we'll head over to our injuries, starting with Chris Martin of the Red Sox, who was placed on the 15-day IL with right elbow inflammation. Martin played catch for the first time since getting injured on Wednesday, but I feel like this is just a chance for the Red Sox to rest Martin through the All-Star break because he's 38 years old and, you know, you don't want to gas him out before we get into the second half and more important games towards September and stuff. Cam Boozer was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, but then he was subsequently optioned to the minors. So nobody really replaces Martin, but it sounds like this is pretty minor for Chris Martin.
Yeah, I hope it is. I mean, he did just miss some time. When did he come back from the anxiety IL stint?
That was like maybe a week before he landed on the IL again.
So I hope it's just something minor and just something that, you know, doesn't keep him out too long. Slayton's been struggling a little bit lately. I think he's getting worn down as well. He's at 42 innings already and, his first MLB season. Zach Kelly's done a great job keeping them to that bullpen afloat. But without Martin, I don't know how. I mean, they're definitely going to, I hope they're going to make a move to add someone to the bullpen here. And Liam Hendricks could also be back.
What do you mean? They got Trey Wingenter.
I know, man. Just like, this is kind of what they've been doing. And it's fine. I mean, the rest of the bullpen's holding them, holding the fort down there. But, I don't think they can just rely on like Liam Hendricks and Chris Martin coming back and that being the answer. So hopefully they make some moves at the deadline.
Totally. And our last IL placement is Reed Garrett of the Mets. He was placed on the 15-day IL with right elbow inflammation as well. An MRI revealed no ligament damage. So that's good news. But nonetheless, he'll be shut down from throwing for at least a week. But Garrett could return within a couple weeks after the All-Star break. So expect him to be back by the end of July, early August. But that's Reed Garrett in New York. And that bullpen really could use some help.
Yeah, I mean, they did add Phil Maton. That's kind of timely. He's probably going to slot right into a setup role. Because I don't know if they're really at the point where they can trust Adam Ottavino anymore with his ERA now over 5. It just leaves you with, you know, Daniel Nunez as like the only guy that they can really trust outside of Edwin Diaz, who's been shaky himself. So, yeah, the Mets are, you know, obviously one of those teams, too. When we talk about trade deadline, are they going to be buyers or sellers? And it looks like they're going to try to buy. And if they do, yeah, bullpen helps. It's got to be at the top of the list.
Totally. Yeah. And you mentioned the Phil Maton trade. The Rays traded Phil Maton to the Mets. An interesting development considering the Rays haven't been sellers in forever. And this definitely isn't an indicator that they are going to be sellers, but it is just a small tick in that direction in suggesting that, you know, maybe Pete Fairbanks and Jason Adam, who still have another year of control after this year, could be on the move as well. Do you think that's something that we should be considering right now?
Yeah, I give it at least a 50% chance, I think, for those two guys. The Rays, it's been a while since the Rays have even had this, like, you know, opportunity, or I don't know if opportunity is the right word, but this, like, predicament where it's do we buy or sell at the deadline? And I think they may be a little bit, the way that they operate and the way that they work, they might be a little bit overdue for to sell and to kind of restock that farm system. This team right now, I don't think, even if you get everyone, if you get Jeffrey Springs back healthy, and I mean, I just, there's a lot of things that would need to go right for them to make a legitimate playoff run this year. So I wonder, Fairbanks and Adam, this seems like the time for that the Rays would move them. Especially, you know, Adam's been pitching really well, and Fairbanks would definitely have a lot of demand. So yeah, I think there's at least a 50% chance those guys move.
Yeah, that's it's a pretty big development there, so that's something to keep an eye on as well. Who do you think would take over the closer role if both Fairbanks and Adam got dealt?
We're probably looking at a back to the old Rays committee, but someone would probably
get the bulk of them. But I don't know who.
Looking at it right now, I mean, like Kevin Kelly. Yeah, that's a great question because there's no one who really stands out. Yeah, that's maybe Manuel Rodriguez sticks around and starts striking people out more often. Yeah. I mean, he's always been kind of an interesting name there. So, yeah, I mean, Clevenger and probably a righty would be my guess for who closes out games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's also best to keep in mind that the Rays like to do this thing where they'll take a reliever that's like mid or maybe slightly above average, put them in the closer role and like boost their trade value a ton and then trade them once they start getting expensive in arbitration because of all the saves. They did that with Emilio Pagan. So that's like the clearest example of just like, oh yeah, we'll just take this guy who we don't care about that much and put him in the closer role. And, you know, he's not really pitching high leverage because it's the ninth inning. But you know, I don't know who they would do that with here. So that's something to keep an eye on. That's the Rays. We can move over to our transactions now. And that's where we've got the bulk of things to talk about, which is interesting considering we've already gone 15 minutes on just like four bits of news. The first transaction is Brock Stewart of the Twins, who was transferred to the 60-day IL. We talked about him last week because he was set to throw a couple of bullpen sessions this week. So that 60-day IL placement was merely a formality because it won't affect his return timeline. Stewart threw a 20-pitch live BP last Friday and began a rehab assignment on Tuesday. So he should be able to return sometime this weekend or early next week. And that's pretty big because Stewart was really good for the Twins prior to getting injured.
When was it that we talked about Josh Staumont not allowing a run? He still hasn't allowed a run.
Yeah, I think that might have been last week.
So... yeah, I'm trying to think of like where he slots in because Jorge Alcala has been pitching lights out. Yeah. Obviously, Griffin Jacks has been good. Duran's not going anywhere. Bullpen's so
crazy.
Yeah, I mean, all of a sudden they are really deep, especially when they get Topa back. I mean, I don't even know if Topa cracks the. He might, if he's got options, he might just stay in AAA for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Stewart, I mean, obviously adds another layer to that already deep bullpen. So, yeah, interesting to see. Hopefully he's healthy. I know this has been longer than expected with his recovery, but they really just need him for, you know, the last, you know, September and October, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's Brock Stewart of the Twins. Our next bit of transaction news was Nick Sandlin of the Guardians, who was activated from the 15-day IL. He's been out since June 19th with lower back inflammation. Eli Morgan was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And this really just helps out the depth in the Guardians bullpen, which really didn't need any help at all, especially somebody of Sandlin's caliber. But with all of the other guys sort of in Cleveland, sort of figuring things out and maintaining their success from the first half, Sandlin has sort of been pushed out of high leverage situations and is now more so a guy that pitches in the sixth or seventh inning. So, I mean, since he landed on the IL, he's lost almost all of his fantasy viability.
Yeah. I was going to say, is Sandlin that much better than Eli Morgan? Just thinking about that. So yeah, he had a good, you know, the first 2 months of the season were looking good. Not so much recently, even before the IL stint. There's Gattis, Barlow, and Cade Smith are way ahead of him. But one of those guys goes down, all of a sudden Sandlin could be getting one or two holds a week. So a name to keep an eye on still.
Totally. One of our favorites, Josh Spores of the Rangers, was activated from the 15-day IL. He landed on the IL way back on May 9th, and I forgot to write down what the injury was. But nonetheless, he's been out for a while.
Elbow, I believe, yeah.
All right. And this is huge because Spores is probably the one guy I'd be keeping an eye on to take over this closer role if and when the Rangers trade away Kirby Yates and David Robertson and Jose Leclerc. I think Spores would be the next guy up considering he closed out the World Series.
Yeah. Sorry, it was actually a shoulder injury that he's been keeping him out. It does sound like the Rangers are willing to, you know, listen to trades and are considering moving some of their, you know, 1 year rentals. So if that's the case, yeah, obviously Spores kind of like moves all the way up the ladder here with Yates, Robertson, and Leclerc all being potential trade candidates. So still need to see. I mean, he's only been able to make it through seven innings so far. I want to see, you know, the strikeout stuff come back that he showed last year in spurts, but between him and Jonathan Hernandez for taking over the closer role, potentially it's, you know, Spores is easily the guy I would I would choose.
Yeah, and there's something about Hernandez where they just have not trusted him in high leverage, or I don't know what it is, but he's got zero holds and zero saves and 32 and a third innings pitched despite pitching to a sub-4 ERA. So he's somebody that they trust, but not in situations where he's getting holds and saves. And maybe that's the case when the closer role opens up. So I would also side on Spores for who would be taking over the closer role in Texas after the trade deadline. We will continue to run through these transactions. There's still a lot more. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe. Like vintage style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more. All made right here in the USA. From growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store, online today. Ashley, for the love of home.
And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We're currently in the middle of discussing the transactions from the past week plus. We're moving over to Walter Pennington of the Royals. He had his contract selected from the minors. I'll run through him really quick as he's no longer in the majors. But he was really interesting when he got called up. I looked at his numbers. He's a 26-year-old southpaw. And at AAA, he pitched to a 2.35 ERA across 53 and two-thirds innings. And that comes with a strikeout rate north of 35% and a sub-9% walk rate. So that's pretty interesting. And then his primary pitch is a 99th percentile PLV mid-80 slider. It's a small sample size, so I don't think you can really trust that PLV, but nonetheless, it's his best pitch. He's also got a pretty solid cutter, but then his sinker and his four-seamer are awful. And like, I'm talking about like 6th percentile PLV on the sinker. And then the four-seamer somehow, 99th percentile, but it has terrible shape and sub-15% usage. So I think his fastballs aren't good. But like I said, he was subsequently optioned to the minors and then recalled again to act as the 27th man in a doubleheader, but it doesn't sound like Pennington's going to remain on the roster. Nonetheless, I think the point of bringing him up is that the Royals have a boatload of relief pitching prospects on the way, and within the next couple of years, they're going to be looking like the 2015 Royals again.
Hopefully, that would be pretty cool. Yeah, I know. I do like bringing – I mean, I had not really heard of him before this, so I'm glad you know we should be bringing these guys up and, you know, talking about what they've been doing, what they've been up to in the minors and why they were called up. So yeah, It does look like his slider grades out as his best pitch. It looks like in, you know, prospect grades, he gets at least a 55 across the board for his slider. So yeah, a lefty who has a good slider, I mean, that's always going to be an option for teams in the bullpen. So especially, I mean, do they still only have Zerp as their only lefty?
No, they got Will Smith.
Oh, they got Will Smith still there and Sam Long. Yeah.
And Chris Bubich.
Bubich moved. Yeah. But yeah, Smith's, you know, not really exciting and not a long-term option there. So yeah, interesting to see if Pennington gets another look this summer or fall, because I know Zerp has had a good season, but he doesn't have any bat missing ability at all. It scares me.
Yeah, no, that bullpen is going to be crazy though. When it's like James MacArthur, John McMillan, Will Klein, and Walter Pennington, that's going to be a pretty decent group of four. Hopefully they can carry over their minor league success into the majors, but that's Walter Pennington. Next, we have Mark Leiter Jr. of the Cubs, who was activated from the 15-day IL. He landed on the IL back on June 23rd with an elbow injury. Ethan Roberts was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move, but Leiter's return is huge for a Cubs Cubs bullpen that has struggled mightily all year long. And I don't know what they're going to do with him. I mean, he leads the team in holds, but he's got a 5.16 ERA and was really struggling before hitting the IL. They don't have many other guys to trust, though. Do you think he's going to be able to get himself back into high leverage opportunities, or I don't know, do they sort of keep him out of it and build up his confidence?
Yeah, I think it might take a minute. I don't think he's going to go right back into it. And you have like Luke Little and Porter Hodge are both throwing pretty well now for them. So there's no need to rush Leiter back in there. But it's going to be interesting to see what the Cubs do at the deadline. They also have Merriweather coming back possibly next week, and Alzolay is not too far behind either. Leiter might be the odd man out, 2 weeks from now. But I do think that ERA is inflated. That's a little bit.
Totally.
It's definitely like really like it's bad luck, and the injury played a factor, I'm sure, as well. So I think I like Hodge a little bit better. I don't know. I was trying to get excited about Porter Hodge, but then looking into it, his fastball is really not good. The velo is not great. The movement, the shape's not great. It's just, it's very mediocre. So that's, if you're a reliever with a bad fastball, unless you're like, Brian Thompson or, Tyler Rogers throwing from that weird arm angle, then you need to confess. Yeah, Whistler throwing 90% sliders. Yeah.
He's throwing 70% sliders. That's pretty goofy.
Hodge?
Or 70% fastballs.
Yeah, I know. Because it's 95, I guess, like that's sure. Good, and it works in the minors, I'm sure. But it's working now. He's at 15 innings and he's pitched really well. Mm-hmm. So but the sweeper is legit. The sweeper's a good pitch.
Well, that's Porter Hodge and Mark Leiter Jr. returning to the Cubs bullpen. Next, we can move over to Hunter Big, B-I-G-G-E. He had his contract selected from the minors by the Cubs. This is another prospect guy that I'm going to do a small, short, quick rundown on. Big is a right-handed pitcher. He's 26 years old. At AAA, he pitched to a 0.77 ERA across a small sample of 11 and two-thirds innings, but it came with a 44.2% strikeout rate, and he's got an elite upper 90s four-seamer and pairs it with a curve, slider, and sweeper at varying velocity bands. So Bidge is, or I'm, I don't know how to pronounce that. I'm scared.
Stick with one. Wrong. We'll find out. Yeah. Okay.
He seems like he could be pretty decent. An upper 90s fastball with three different breakers that are all decent.
He's touched 100 before. There's a chance here for him to, again, the Cubs definitely could use some help in the bullpen, even with these guys coming back. And, if they do decide to sell and Hector Neris is out, maybe Drew Smiley's out, obviously, not a huge move, or Jorge Lopez as well. Those are the three guys that could open up spots here. So, 99 plus is a good start. Let's see how the secondaries look. And I haven't looked at him as much as Hodge because he just came up, but, it's an interesting name to keep an eye on for sure.
It's an interesting
I need a pronunciation.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
I'm trying to find the pronunciation. I think we'll
be okay. I wouldn't be surprised if he's optioned to the minors by our next podcast. But nonetheless, we got another guy who was promoted. Daniel Robert had his contract selected from the minors by the Rangers. He's a 29-year-old righty at AAA, pitched with 2.35 ERA across 30 innings. Came with a 0.68 whip and a 35% strikeout rate and a 6% walk rate. And his primary pitch is a sweeper with tons of horizontal movement, though he pairs it with a mediocre mid-90s heater and a rare changeup for lefties. But Daniel Robert, despite being 29, is somewhat interesting in a Rangers bullpen that is about to probably have a lot of shakeup. He wouldn't be somebody I'm considering in fantasy right now, but he's definitely worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah. I mean, 29 years old. So it's an interesting, little bit of a late bloomer here, but, again, like the Rangers we talked about, they could be moving three of their top relievers. So, things could open up for him in the second half, and those AAA numbers are really good. So yeah, the sweeper's exciting. Let's just see if the fastball is good enough for him to to at least stay in the in this bullpen.
Yep. Next transaction is Gregory Santos of the Mariners, who was activated from the 60-day IL. He's missed the entire season thus far with a lat strain. He threw just one inning at AAA during a rehab assignment, and he's back. And he's pretty exciting because he's only 24. He throws 100 miles per hour with a sinker, so he's a big ground ball guy. And he's going to be a huge boon to a Mariners bullpen that really hasn't had guys that they can trust in the late innings. It's been Andrés Muñoz, Ryan Stanek, and Taylor Saucedo all year. So adding Gregory Santos, who was the closer for the White Sox for a little bit last year, definitely is a huge help and takes some of the pressure off Muñoz and might actually lock him into even more saves.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for this. He looked really good, or, you know, at least the numbers looked really good in his first game back. He was sitting at 100.3, which is up from last year. So, you know, no concerns there as far as velo goes with all this time off and the injury. And yeah, I mean, I like him. I'd be more excited about him than Stanek. And the way Muñoz is pitching lately, I mean, yeah, there's a chance we see some Santos save chances in the not too distant future. So yeah, in holds leagues, you should already be either rostering him or looking at him. He's a top 30 or so holds option right now. Just, you know, it's only been one game back, so I want to see how he looks, how he holds up. But yeah, he's definitely an exciting name to keep an eye on.
Yeah, especially in holds leagues. Our next transaction is Steven Wilson of the White Sox, who was surprisingly optioned to the minors. Jordan Leisure was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, but Wilson's demotion was very surprising considering he's been like the best reliever on the south side of Chicago this year with a 3.46 ERA and a pretty decent strikeout. Never mind. 22% strikeout rate. But the big concern here is that his walks have risen to a crazy high level this year, north of 14%, which has made his ERA estimators look terrible. So maybe this is a chance for him to go back to the minors and work on his command because he was likely due for a lot of negative regression in the second half.
Yeah, he's struggled in the second half in the past as well. But it's just funny that they called up Jordan Leisure, who ended up getting he got rocked his first game back as well, and he hasn't worked out. So, you know, I want to, you know, when we talk about who's going to end up closing out games for them in the second half, if it's not Brebbia or Kopech, if it's not Wilson or Leisure, then who is it going to be? I mean, is Prelander Barroa going to get a chance eventually? Maybe that would be at least someone to be excited about. Because right now, I mean, obviously there's not a lot to look forward to with the White Sox in general, but if you're trying to scrap together saves in the second half, trying to predict who's going to be closing out games in Chicago, I don't know where to turn right now.
It's like their two best arms are lefties and Tanner Banks and Jared Schuster. And neither of them are really like they don't look like closers just based on their stuff. Mostly Schuster, who strikes out under 15% of the batters he faces.
Yeah, Schuster is probably going to he's not really a closer. I don't think who knows? Maybe Michael Soroka, who's pitching well out of the bullpen. We talked about his strikeout rate going up. Imagine if he's closing out games. No, he's not, but yeah, crazier things have happened.
That's true. All right. Then we had another surprising option that was, you know, corrected right away. Dylan Lee was optioned to the minors to make room for Bryce Elder in the rotation. And then he was subsequently recalled like 2 days later. So I'm sure they talked to him and were just like, hey, we got to do this just because you have options, but we'll make sure you're back in like 2 days. There was a time, though, where you and I were like, what is going on? Why are they optioning the best reliever in baseball from the past few weeks?
Yeah, I he had options. I didn't realize he was the only guy that had options in that bullpen. So I guess, yeah, it makes sense. And at least it was a very short stint. But yeah, Dylan Lee had been pitching so well. At first I was like, this has got to be like, I know like Jesse Chavez has also been pitching well, but also Grant Holmes is on the roster and he's, I don't know. I guess that makes the most sense for just a short period of time. But yeah, I think Lee should be up with the big league team for the rest of the season. If not, you know, unless there's like another situation where they have to call up a spot starter, but yeah, Lee should be all set. And, you know, I still like him as a deep league holds option or an NL only option because, yeah, the strikeout, the swing and miss stuff there is just bonkers right now.
Totally. I'll touch on this next guy just briefly. Manuel Rodriguez of the Rays was recalled from the minors. You mentioned him earlier as maybe a candidate that could take over the closer role once it's cleared up from Fairbanks and Jason Adam. But he was a former top prospect for the Cubs. Am I right?
Yes.
All right. Jeremiah Estrada 2.0. But he's pitched to a 1.09 ERA across 24 innings at AAA this year with a 22.9% strikeout minus walk ratio, which is really good for a guy that has constantly struggled with his control throughout his professional career. So Manuel Rodriguez, definitely somebody to keep an eye on in Tampa Bay. But our next IL activation was Miguel Castro, who was activated from the 15-day IL. He's been out since April 23rd, and actually since before that, as the move was retroactive to April 21st, with right shoulder inflammation. And they've been out him without him for so long.
Yeah.
That bullpen has really like become its own animal without him. I don't know. It's like I'm trying to think of an analogy, but I think it's too hot.
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, a big part of their high leverage team last year. Like, he was getting a lot of setup work, a lot of holds from him, and it's kind of, yeah, Ryan Thompson's kind of taken over that a little bit, and Justin Martinez a lot of bit. So yeah, Castro now, where does he fit in? If he's healthy, if he looks like the good Miguel Castro, because this is a guy who's very polarizing. I mean, there's still opportunities here, even with Martinez, Ginkle, and Thompson pitching well. But yeah, I don't think in Holds leagues he's anyone to really look at yet. But yeah, if, you know, he's got a good, you know, good breaking ball, so I don't know, maybe he works his way back up into a Holds situation.
Yeah, I've never really trusted Castro. He seems like a guy that gets by with a lot of deception and weak contact and stuff, which usually isn't conducive to a lot of fantasy success because it means low strikeout rates and balls in play, high whips. Castro, probably not somebody to consider in fantasy at the moment. And then our last transaction is our final trade. Colin Selby was traded from the Royals to the Orioles. We actually talked about him when he got called up earlier this year by the Royals. He's a guy with a lot of velocity. I think so. Is that right?
I want to say yes. I know that's right. Between I'm trying to think of ex-Pirates relief prospects. I get him confused sometimes.
He throws 94. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. There's someone else I can't think of.
Yeah. I'm on the same page. But he's been pretty interesting in the past, though he really does not have control of his pitches. So maybe he can figure that out in Baltimore and become something that they can rely on, because despite how much success they found out of the bullpen, I really don't have that much trust outside of Kimbrel.
Yeah, they're going to have to add. I mean, it's Cano. Cano's been fine. Jacob Webb's been fine. But yeah, they're going to have to add outside of those three. They're probably going to add more than one reliever, or at least one reliever and one starter. I'd imagine the pitching is going to be their big target. This trade deadline. So I wouldn't imagine Selby's on the major league roster for long. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting relief pitcher prospect back in the day. Like 1 or 2 years ago with the Pirates. So maybe you know, the Orioles have figured things out with guys before. So maybe mm-hmm. they can work their magic here with Selby.
Yeah, that would be cool. Well, that will wrap up our news, notes, injuries, and transactions section. And it only took us 35 minutes. So we'll go right into the three up, three down section as we discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's ranks. We'll start with the risers, beginning with Raisel Iglesias, who continues to rise. He was on this last week, right?
Yeah, he was. I was going to say, yeah, he's been on maybe 3 weeks or at least 2 weeks in a row. I don't know. He just doesn't stop.
Did you move
stop,
him into like top five or something?
Yeah, I got him at five now.
Oh my gosh. Because
I don't. It's hard to trust, you know. And we're going to talk about some of the other guys that fell behind him, like Andres Munoz and Mason Miller, who just. It's just been a little too long of a concern. Like, I gave Munoz and Miller a bit of a leash here to figure things out. And Miller's been pretty good. He's been good. He just hasn't been. you know, if Mason Miller is going to be in the top three, he needs to be like elite with his ratios and strikeout numbers because he's not getting a ton of saves. So Iglesias, you know, we talked about at least last week or the week before how his velo has been, you know, rising. He's getting more strikeouts now. And, you know, over his past 18 and a third innings, only three earned runs, 26.1% strikeout minus walk rate, 36.1% CSW over that time, which is tops amongst closers. So the bat missing ability has come back to life with him. And he's just consistent. He's going to get a ton of save chances with the Braves, even though they're not the elite Braves team of like the last couple of years, but this Braves team's still winning, you know, enough games for him to be relevant. So yeah, I just think he's number five right now because I don't really know what to do. Everyone else has been, they've just shown some sort of, you know, either regression or flaws, where Iglesias is, at least has been just like steady all year. Even if when he wasn't getting strikeouts, he was still posting elite ratios. And mm-hmm. now that the swing and miss is back, I'm really excited for him in the second half.
Mm-hmm. And I've done this stat in the last two times we talked about him, but I'm going to update it. Through the middle of June, he struck out multiple batters just three times. And then since then, or multiple batters in an appearance three times. Since then, he's done it 5 times since the middle of June in less than a month. So definitely a different Raisel Iglesias out there on the mound for the Braves. Our next riser is Craig Kimbrel of the Orioles. And, you know, we'll talk about him later when it comes to the All-Star game. But he's been really, really good this year and really good recently. Since May 10th, Craig Kimbrel has allowed one run. And he's got a 0.43 ERA, and he's got a strikeout rate north of 40% and a walk rate under 7%. That's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much across the board, he's been like a top three closer this year throughout baseball. So even when he had that like stint where he got removed from the role, he still has 23 saves. Yeah, let's save Kimbrel for when we talk about the All-Star game rosters and whatnot, because, yeah, it's a very interesting snub there for sure.
Yeah. All right. Our last riser is a surprising one, Hector Neris. I have him on one team, so I sort of get a little bit of a glimpse into what he's been doing. And when he had those three straight appearances in June where he gave up a combined 8 runs, 7 earned, I thought he was over. But since then, he has walked just 2 batters and has not allowed a run for 5 1/3 innings with 10 strikeouts. That is a completely mm-hmm. different Hector Neris than the one we had before.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, there's something going on here. Something working here. This looks like the Hector Neris that I've been used to over the past couple outings. So, is it sustainable? I haven't been able to, you know, I don't know if it's sustainable yet. It's want a little bit more of a sample here.
It's the slider. He's got a slider now.
Oh, so he threw it
3% the rest of the year, and now he's been throwing it more than his splitter. Oh, well, never mind. Nope, that was just one outing. I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know what's wrong with him.
Well, he's mixing it in at least a little bit. Yeah, because he's usually fastball splitter, and
yeah,
the slider's more of a rare offering from him, but he's missing bats now, and I moved him up like 2 spots, but
mm-hmm.
He's definitely I don't know if he's going to be traded or not either, so there's a lot of moving parts here and a lot could change, but at least he's doing this. He's got a huge, you know, the strikeout rate over the past couple outings is nice to see. So whether he's traded or not, yeah, that remains to be seen. But for now, he's the Cubs closer still. So there's some value in that in save only leagues.
Totally. And as closers rise up the ranks, others have to fall to accommodate the riser. So we'll talk about our trio of closers that are falling down the ranks, starting with Andrés Muñoz of the Mariners. Why is Muñoz falling down the ranks this week?
I think that back injury is just still lingering and just affecting him. Because since the start of June, he's been not the same, you know, not the Andrés Muñoz we're used to. He's got a 4.4% strikeout minus walk rate with a 4.44 nice. Sierra. yes, and that's from the since the start of June, which is I think that's now up to like seven. There, it's a pretty good sample size. So
it's 12 innings.
Yeah, so I don't know if he needs an IL stint. He's just been like pushing through this back thing. But maybe the All-Star game, maybe the break there helps him out a little bit. But yeah, it's a concerning trend. And if, you know, either he needs to miss some time and get things right, or he just has to work through it eventually. But for now, it's a little bit concerning. So I bumped him down below Iglesias and into, you know, he's just not worthy of being up there with, like, you know, Hader and Clase right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would also be concerned as well. He has not gone multiple outings in a row without striking a batter out the whole season up until
Did you see that
recently where he went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 outings in a row without a strikeout, and it was almost 6 or 7, but he mixed in one strikeout. And then the walks, like, that's not normal for him either. As you mentioned, the walk rate is huge, up to 15.7% since the beginning of June. Prior to June, he was walking 8.2%. So that's like he's doubled his walk rate. That's and slashed his strikeout rate in half. That's not the what's the opposite of ideal? Whatever that is. That's that's what that is. We can move over to the A's, where Mason Miller is falling down the ranks. He just has not been getting a lot of save opportunities, and despite still sporting like the off the charts fastball velocity and great slider, it doesn't feel like he's been as dominant as he was when he looked like he was like the best pitcher of all time.
Yeah, that's kind of what it is. Like I kind of mentioned before, it's if he's not going to be that, you know, guy with a 50% strikeout rate, then like I don't really think I can put him in the top three, because he has six saves since the beginning of May.
And a 3.93 ERA.
Right. So
May 23rd.
Yeah, and past 17.1 innings, 23.2% strikeout minus walk rate, which is fine. But like again, it's like if Mason Miller, I'm kind of expecting like 35 plus there at this point with how of what we've seen. So I wonder if maybe he's just like, you know, he kind of poured it all out in the first month and a half, and he's kind of, you know, wearing down a little bit, not like completely, but just, you know, a little wear and tear where the velo's down like a shade. I think he's down like half a mile per hour or a mile per hour or something. So if the saves were there, he'd still be a top five option for sure. But it's just, you know, with this A's team, it's going to be hard to predict consistent save chances. So for now, I'd rather take my chances with a guy like Iglesias, who's, you know, going to be consistent on the mound and consistent with getting saves, hopefully at least.
Yeah, totally agree right there. And then our last follower on the closer ranks is Michael Kopech of the White Sox. Outside of him likely being traded this month, he just continues to be a headache. It definitely put him in that reliever version of a cherry bomb conversation alongside Aroldis Chapman, where it's like sometimes he can do what he did last night when he pitched an immaculate inning for a save, and then sometimes he can go out and do what he did 3 days prior where he allowed four runs while getting just two outs. And that's just sort of what you have to deal with Michael Kopech.
It's the hipster, the headache inducing. It's like he goes from allowing, you know, runs in three consecutive outings with one being a four run, you know, blown save. And then he throws an immaculate inning. And then he allows four earned runs against the Marlins and then has an immaculate inning against the Twins, like 3 days later. Like it doesn't make any sense, but that's kind of how he has been this year. So, I just hope he's traded. And I know we talked a little bit about like, he's been throwing his cutter more. I want to see he needs to develop a second. I know he's just been relying on his four seamer, and he just needs to develop a second pitch that he at least trust and can throw for strikes when needed, because you can't just be throwing a four seamer 80% of the time unless it's like, I mean, some guys do it and get away with it, and Josh Hader early.
You have to have location.
He tries to live at the top of the zone, and he more or less does, but it's it's not consistent enough, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And guys can hit 99 now. So when you miss down the middle with 99, it's a home run.
I know. It's either a walk. It's it's like a walk or a hard hit ball from him, pretty much. So
yeah. But the cutter stuff is certainly interesting because he was fastball slider for so long at the start of the season. And now he's incorporating this cutter, which is 5 miles per hour faster than the slider, but still almost 10 miles per hour slower than the four seamer. So it still acts as a secondary pitch. And the way he was stealing strikes with that pitch when he threw that immaculate inning definitely got me interested because it really seemed like it caught batters off guard where it looked like he was going out of the zone and would just sneak right in. And I think we were both on the same page that if he cuts his fastball usage down to like 65% and bumps the cutter up to 20 to 25% and maybe the slider down to 5%, he's got a pretty decent three pitch mix there. And I think wherever he ends up is probably going to be a team that can get the most out of him.
Hopefully. Right. Yeah, I hope so. I mean, yeah, he got some really bad swings on that cutter. So yeah, I just, trust it a little bit more. And if you're him right now and you're the White Sox, I know he's closing out games, so he's in high leverage situations, but it's also kind of you should be trying to work on some things here, because the White Sox winning games doesn't mean anything right now, and either work on some things for yourself or for the team for next year. But because every time I look at his outings, it's like he threw his fastball 25 times and his cutter or slider once or twice. It's like, what can we just try? Can we just mix it in a little bit more? It's so predictable.
We've seen your fastball, right?
Yeah, it's good. I get it. It's a good four seamer. So it's a good base. But now the base is there. Now let's get the secondary pitch and, take the next step forward. So.
It's like a pop star and they have their one big hit and then they just play that all the time.
Yeah.
And you go to see them live and that's the only song and they play it over and over and you're like, do you have any other songs that we can hear maybe?
Yeah. And then they play the one song and then everyone leaves after that because they don't care about anything else. It's just useless. So give me a secondary. And he just needs to get out of there.
It's going to make the fastball better too.
Oh yeah. 100%. Yeah. Cause again, the fastball could be a little bit more, can definitely be more consistent with the fastball, but for the most part, I like where he's living with it upstairs. He doesn't miss a ton in the middle of the plate or down. So there's the pieces are here. I he's another guy too. I wonder, I might be thinking too much, but a sinker or a splitter or a splinker or whatever you want to call it, might be something, that he could also add. I don't know. Just give me one. We'll start with one secondary. We'll go from there.
Because I'm like, oh, he's going to do a splitter. He's not going to control that. Yeah. Let's just focus on one thing that's working right now. And that's Michael Kopech's cutter. So let's hope he finds himself in new threads by the end of the month and then can go from there. But that's Michael Kopech, and that wraps up the 3-up, 3-down section. To recap, our risers were Raisel Iglesias, Craig Kimbrel, and Hector Neris, while our fallers were Andres Munoz, Mason Miller, and Michael Kopech. Next, we will discuss our main topic, which is our reaction to the selections to the All-Star game. But first, we're going to take our second break here on In the Pen.
This summer, discover American Giant's timeless, high-quality clothing made right here in the USA. Every piece is designed for quality and style that's built to last. From vintage style tees to tough tank tops, breathable polos to lightweight sweatshirts, you can find your perfect fit. Celebrate American craftsmanship and support local communities with every stitch. Go to American-Giant.com and use promo code STAPLE20 for 20% off your first order.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store, online today. Ashley, for the love of home.
And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We are entering our main topic as we discuss the All-Star game rosters, most notably the relief pitchers, and we'll also discuss some of the snubs, both amongst closers and non-closers. But let's start with the selections over on the American League side. We had Emmanuel Clase of the Guardians, Clay Holmes of the Yankees, Mason Miller of the A's, and Kirby Yates of the Rangers. And one of these guys is not like the others.
I was gonna say the same exact thing. You stole the words from me.
Sorry.
Oh, it's so glaring. It's so glaring too.
Mm-hmm. The whip, everybody's got whips right under 0.9, and then Clay Holmes, I've got a 1.26 whip.
I don't get it at all. I don't understand where this came from or how this happened. Yeah, that's the only thing that I can see, because
that's the only thing that makes sense.
There's not one number that makes sense here for him mm-hmm. over Craig Kimbrell. Not even just Kimbrell, there's other guys too. Like, I mean, Munoz, Kenley Jansen's been better than him mm-hmm. this year. Even like, I know Josh Hader's ERA's at 4, but like, I mean, I'll take the whip and strikeout rate over Holmes. It's a weird one for sure. It's one of the weirdest ones I've seen in a while. And we'll talk about the other side too, but like Helsley's ratios aren't great either, but he's got 31 saves. So I kind of get that. Like Holmes has 20 saves. It's not even in the top five amongst league mm-hmm. leaders, I don't think. So it's a weird one.
Yeah, no, and you're right. Just being like, I don't know which stat they're looking at that is making them make this decision, because Craig Kimbrell beats him in every single stat. Like I'm sure it's like ground ball rate is the only thing. Yeah, they just sorted by ground ball rate, and they were just like, "Whoa, look at him! He's so good."
That's what the All-Star game needs, is more ground balls. That's what people are watching. Yeah,
got to put the shortstops to work. But yeah, those are the AL selections, and I feel like Holmes might have been like the most egregious selection out of the entirety of the whole All-Star selection process. It's really just because he's on the Yankees, and I hate to be the guy who's just like, oh, this guy shouldn't be an All-Star, because I'm sure he's super proud of it. And if I were him, I would also be like, hey, I'm so proud. I don't care what anybody else says. Like, I earned this fair and square. But yeah, if we're looking at this from a fan perspective, it's pretty clear Clay Holmes is not an All-Star. But we can move over to our National League sections. And we had Ryan Helsley of the Cardinals, Jeff Hoffman of the Phillies, Tanner Scott of the Marlins, Matt Strom of the Phillies, and Robert Suarez of the Padres. And boy, was I surprised to see this has changed a little, but two non-closers from the same team make the All-Star team.
Yeah, Matt Strom was, I get Hoffman because he's got 9 saves at least, and the ratios are great. K rate's great. And I do love that Matt Strom's here, and I wish that there was more. I wish we could get more middle relievers into the All-Star game, because there's a lot of great ones. And, you know, I was thinking about this today, like, how do we do that? Do we have to have like 2 games? Like, I want to see more.
A bullpen
like,
game?
Because this is the thing with like Strom makes sense. Like, I totally get that. But then it's like, what about, you know, Hunter Gaddis or Griffin Jacks or, you know, some of these other guys who are not closers who are just having like absolutely insane seasons. I mean, Griffin Jacks has been crazy this year. I like it for Strom, but I want to see more. But I just don't know how it works, because you have to have the starters, obviously. And,
yeah,
you know, they're gonna
too many guys.
They're gonna lean towards closers. So I wish there. Yeah, maybe have like a separate, like just the middle relief All-Star game, and we'll get like I don't know who's gonna hit or whatnot, but we can figure
the relievers on the other team.
Yeah, just relievers versus relievers. That would be fun. I would watch.
They're just destroying each other. Yeah, nobody's swinging. Yeah, they're just throwing all sliders.
99 at the top of the zone.
dotted on the outside edge. Yeah.
Could be interesting.
Sit down, Craig Kimbrell. Sit down. So those are the American League and National League selections for the All-Star game. We'll discuss some snubs. It is All-Star stuff, so it's like, it's got the same vibes as Hall of Fame debates, but even
it does
less but it's even less meaningful because it's like Hall of Fame debates. It's like, oh, well, at least like this is important and it's like going to change people's legacies and everything. But it's like, you know, one All-Star game's not going to change, like make it so that somebody makes the Hall of Fame or doesn't. But there is still so much discourse around it, despite it not really mattering in the long run. But, you know, these players get a lot of money for making the All-Star team. Our closer snubs on the American League side, aforementioned Craig Kimbrel, Andrés Muñoz, Kenley Jansen, and Josh Hader. I have been banging the drum for Craig Kimbrel because he's been so dominant. And I mentioned the stat earlier where he has like a sub 0.5 ERA across his last 25 innings with a 40%+ strikeout rate. And he's pitching for the Orioles, so he's got tons of saves. Kimbrel is an all-star, I think, even over Kirby Yates as well. And there's an argument to be had for him against Class A and Miller. I mean, Miller is like, I don't know, so astronomical in terms of his star power that he earned this season. And Class A is leading the American League in saves. He can't really replace them, but
yeah, I think Class A is the one guy that is I would put above Kimbrel. I think Miller's a good choice. Obviously, the K rate's crazy, and you just want that firepower. You want that electricity for the All-Star game. So it's a fun one.
And the A's need an
All-Star. That's, you know, like the Marlins need an All-Star, and Tanner Scott's there.
Yeah.
But Tanner Scott's been good.
Totally.
But yeah, I think Kimbrel's the big miss here. And it's, you know, they had five relievers in the NL. Like, they couldn't have just added a fifth reliever in the AL and just snuck Kimbrel on there.
Or done the thing that they did when Pujols and Miggy were in their last All-Star game and just just put Kimbrel and Jansen in there because they both surpassed Francisco Rodriguez on the saves leaderboard or something like that. But I guess it's not their last year, so you can't really
technically
do something like that. Yeah.
The one good thing from this is I think Kimbrel's appearance in the All-Star game last year may have wrecked his second half, so maybe this, no, for real, this could be good to get him like some time off here,
yeah,
and have him recharge for the second half. So yeah, if you're an Orioles fan, or if you're, you know, the Orioles management this is actually probably a blessing in disguise. And he got, you know, he's probably feeling like, hey, I deserve to be here. Like, he's got something else to prove here in the second half. So yeah, and so hopefully we won't be seeing Kimbrel throw 30 pitches again to close out the ninth.
They
of the
really
All-Star
have
to
make
game.
Him throw 30 pitches.
I'm pretty sure he's at 30 pitches last year because
that's funny and messed up.
Because you get to the ninth inning, I don't know if they had anyone else available, and he like walked two guys, let up a hit, he loaded the bases, and then he got out of it after 30 pitches. But yeah.
That's so funny. Wow. All right. Well, those are our American League closer snubs, unless you wanted to talk a little bit more about Muñoz or Jansen or Hader.
No, I think Muñoz and Jansen have good ratios and decent strikeout numbers. They're not, I don't want to say snubs, but they're also deserving. You know, the All-Star game is kind of like, you know, politics and whatnot. So like these guys are having a really good year, and
yeah,
no one would complain if they were in the All-Star game also. So, yeah, more of like, you know, if we had two games, you know, we could expand it a little bit and add some of these relievers that are also deserving. Because typically if you have a closer with a 1.45 ERA and 1.02 WHIP and a 31% K rate, like that's probably going to get you into the All-Star game. But this year, there's been a lot of good closers, so just not the year for Muñoz.
And not good closers that make the All-Star team. Just kidding.
I know. If Clay Holmes a break.
Yeah. Sorry, buddy. Our closer snubs on the National League side include Trevor McGill, Kyle Finnegan, and Raisel Iglesias. We talked a lot about Raisel Iglesias, and we talk about Kyle Finnegan all year long, and Trevor McGill for that matter. But McGill has just been so good. I feel like maybe he should have been on there instead of Strom, but I mean, I'm not mad about Strom being on there. It's just McGill's been so good. 1.53 ERA, 30% strikeout rate, 18 saves. And I mean, Kyle Finnegan sort of in the same boat where he's got very similar numbers. The strikeouts aren't there, but he's got 23 saves and is in the midst of the best season of his career. So pretty disappointing for both of those guys not to make the team, though. Still not out of the question that somebody gets injured and they replace him.
Right. Yeah. I think Finnegan, you know, we've been down on before, but this is the year where he deserves his due here. And yeah, I would think he might be the first man up if someone drops out. So, but yeah, you look at the numbers, the NL bullpen is just really, really good. I guess Tanner Scott, you could make an argument he doesn't belong over some of these guys, and I guess Helsley too, but 31 saves is going to get you in. So, I just, you know, all three of these, you know, McGill, Finnegan, and Iglesias have pitched great, but, and McGill would have been fun to see. I hope he gets a chance if someone drops out as well, just to see him. Cause I don't think enough people know about Trevor McGill and like how nasty he is. So exactly. Getting him on this stage would be really cool to see.
Yeah, agreed. Well, let's close things out with some non-closer snubs, starting with the American League. Hunter Gaddis has been incredible this year, 0.69 whip, 1.25 ERA, just a really dominant breakout season. Luke Weaver is sort of in that same boat where he's transitioned from being a starter to being a dominant reliever.
He's been better than Clay Holmes. They're on the same team, and his numbers are just across the board better. Yeah. But yeah, whatever.
Griffin Jack seems to be the most egregious to me. I mean, yeah. I think Gaddis's numbers definitely compete with him, but Jack's having already like established himself as a reliever that we all know, if you're like a baseball nerd, but he's got great numbers to back it up and an increased strikeout rate nearing 35%. And Griffin Jacks is also a handful of saves. And so I feel like he might be the biggest snub outside of Kimbrel on the American League side personally.
Yeah, I would say Jacks as well. If they're going to include any non-closers in the American League side, Jacks would have to be the option, I would think, just you know, how the ratios are good. Strikeout rate's crazy. You know, he misses a ton of bats. He's really fun to watch. It would be fun to see him too, because that's another guy who isn't a closer, so he doesn't get a ton of recognition and not a lot of people get to see him pitch. But it'd be fun to see him on the big stage in Texas.
Totally. And the last couple of AL non-closers that didn't make the All-Star team, Jason Adam, once again, really solid this year. And then Yimi Garcia having the best season of his career and has had a handful of saves as well. But those are the non-closers in the American League that didn't make the All-Star team, but probably should have. In the National League, we've got Brian Hudson. Of course, I'm going to root for that guy. 1.54 ERA, 0.75 whip, just completely dominant breakout season for the Southpaw in Milwaukee. But if it was between him and McGill, I'd go with McGill probably.
Yeah, and I'm trying to compare like Hudson to Strom. It's really close. I guess Strom has a little bit better, strikeout rate, but those guys are, almost identical. So yeah, you could really make an argument for either one, but and these aren't really snubs or these are just guys who deserve recognition going into the All-Star break. Yeah. So yeah.
Hudson, Daniel Hudson,
some. Yeah. Both of them.
And the other Hudson, Daniel Hudson, also one of them. And he's so old. I have no idea how he's still doing this. How old is he? I think he's like 38.
37, 38.
37.
Yeah.
Let's see. Faster. He is 37 this year, but nonetheless, 1.67 ERA, 0.77 whip, and a 28% strikeout rate as the top setup man in LA. That's pretty cool. And what a weird career I'm getting sidetracked, but what a weird career for Daniel Hudson. Cause I remember, I used to,
Diamondbacks.
Yeah, back when he was on the Diamondbacks, cause like 2010 was like when I really started to become conscious about what was going on in baseball. I was like 13 then. So the Giants started being good and I just really started to pay attention more. And so I was playing a lot of MLB The Show and I would like do my own roster updates. I would like pay attention so close to baseball and like go in, and I'd made Daniel Hudson so good because in 2011 and 2010, he was just like a dominant out of nowhere breakout, coming up from the minors, and I didn't know anything about minor league. So him and Ian Kennedy were like two guys that just have a soft spot for.
Yeah, that's Hudson's had he's gone from starter to reliever. Then he was a huge part of that Nationals team, the Nationals World Series team.
He was a bad reliever for a while.
Yeah, he was. And then that like Nationals team is kind of where he turned things around.
Of 32.
He's never made it to the All-Star game. He's 37. It would have been cool to see him there. Mm-hmm. Get one All-Star appearance. Maybe he could be an option potentially if someone doesn't play next week. So Yeah, Hudson's a fun story for sure. One of those just journeymen who grinded through it and, you know, having a really good back nine of his career.
Mm-hmm. Another guy who's having a surprisingly good year is Ryan Walker. He sort of went under the radar last year, but then this year he's taken his game to an even higher level by walking fewer guys and striking out more, and that'll usually do it. But he's got a 2.44 ERA this year as he pitches for the Giants, my team. So, of course, I'm rooting for him to make the All-Star team, and he definitely deserved it because he's been pitching so well this year.
Yeah, those numbers are a little bit inflated, too, because he just allowed three earned runs yesterday or 2 days ago. So those ratios looked even better, and the strikeout rate's great, missing a ton of bats, 34.6% CSW. So, yeah, he would be a fun one. And he's a fan. Again, I'm sure not everyone's seen him pitch, but he's got a pretty funky delivery, kind of sidearm slinger. But, yeah, his slider is nasty. So, yeah, he would have been a cool one to see.
Yeah, when I went to the Giants game earlier this year, Ryan Walker came out, and Ryan said it like we haven't just mentioned his name before. So weird. But he came out, and I'm there with my brother, but he's like distracted by some kid he's taking care of. But I'm like, hey, bro, like, look, like this guy's crazy. When he pitches, he like steps all the way across the rubber.
Yeah.
And he didn't watch, but I really wanted him to, because Ryan Walker pitches so weird. Yeah, he does like that sidearm slingy thing, but then he also like starts on the left side of the rubber and like steps all the way to the other side. And it's so weird. I've never seen anybody do it that dramatically before, but yeah, Walker, somebody worth watching. And then so are Alex Vesia and Orion Kirkring. Vesia has been somebody that we've kept an eye on for a while because he's a PLV darling and pitches for the Dodgers. And he's been dominant this year, 1.33 ERA and a 0.89 whip. And then Orion Kirkring makes just another Phillies reliever that's absolutely incredible this year. 1.32 ERA, 0.91 whip in his first full season. That Phillies bullpen just has way too many good relievers.
I know. Imagine if Gregory Soto figures it out here in the second half, too.
Or Dominguez. Sorry,
Anthony Dominguez. I know. And I'm sure they'll add. I mean, I'm sure they'll add at least one or two guys. They're probably one. Yeah. They don't need to add two. But yeah, I mean, Jose Alvarado's been a little bit shaky. And it's got to be interesting for Alvarado that, like, you know, Hoffman and Strom both made the All-Star game. And he's got the most saves there and he didn't. So. And it's not like he's been bad. It's just those two guys have obviously been more consistent and pitched better for the entirety of the season.
Yeah. I did want to get your thoughts while we're on the Phillies before we go away. Jeff Hoffman's got four saves in each of his last in his last four appearances. And it seems like they're using him as the closer more than Alvarado. And actually, maybe they're using Alvarado in high leverage. But Hoffman's got, I think, like four of the last five saves.
They're using, so I think today they switched back to, I believe, but that's because Hoffman, they used Hoffman to face the middle of the order or the top of the order. So I think that's kind of what their plan is. They're going to use, you know, Hoffman for that middle to early part of the order, that pocket. And then Alvarado is kind of, you know, if the you know, back of the lineup's up, then Alvarado might get the save, or if it's, you know, lefty righty matched as well, because, you know, that makes it easy for them. If there's a, you know, three lefties coming up in the inning, it's going to be matchup dependent. I don't think Hoffman's going to just take it over. But
dope to see him get more saves.
Yeah. I mean, I've been holding on to him in a couple leagues and, it's really paid off. I wasn't expecting. In the PL league, I just kind of added him in the beginning of the season. And yeah, I was just like, you know what? I'm going to at least get good ratios here.
Yeah.
And then he's got nine saves. So it's pretty cool.
Exactly. pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll take it. Well, that'll do it for this episode of In the Pen. I think we're on what episode is this? 80 something?
87.
87. That's a lot of episodes. So, yeah. By the end of, what's 13 weeks from now? This offseason, we will hit 100.
Oh, that's boring.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can save it. we can just skip over 100 and then do it opening day. Yeah. Back to 100. We're like on 113 and then we're just like episode 100.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your Twitter and anything else you're working on?
Yeah, you can find me at I am Rick Graham on Twitter. Just putting out, you know, just working on the three articles each week, closing time, hold up, and saves plus holds. And that's pretty much it. And I'll let you plug the article you're working on. So yeah, sure. You go and do that.
That article is going to be accompanying our previous podcast, and it's going to look over the relievers that are likely to be traded at the deadline and how you can sort of work around that in terms of taking advantage of it in fantasy leagues. So that should be coming out later this week or early next week. Outside of that, this podcast, the weekend editions of the Daily First Pitch podcast, my personal podcast, Free Baseball, just hit episode 99. And I also do playing time analysis over at Baseball HQ. But you can follow me on Twitter. You can find me in a pool of sweat in my room. And you can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod over on Twitter. But that'll do it for this episode of In the Pen. We'll talk to you all next week.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality quilting staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe, like vintage-style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun, trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in store, online today. Ashley, for the love of home.